Cabin of Nemes, given a good going over. I don't want them killed, just given a good going over. Hello and welcome to episode 157 of Ribbon of Memes, a podcast where we interrogate films previously described by other ex-cons, current cons, as masterpieces. I am Nick, the kingpin ruling London from the prison of this podcast, and I am joined as ever by Roger.
Chirpy Cockney Sparrow, innit?
And we are talking about the original, the 1969 Italian Job. I often open these podcasts with a quote. It was, I obviously wanted to avoid the blowing the bloody doors off quote, but it was very hard to pick another quote because this is a very, very, very quotable film.
Hmm.
Now, this is a film I came to very young, and watched it a number of times. It was probably my brother's favourite film, so I ended up watching it a lot, and I got slightly worn out on it, so I haven't watched it probably for 20 years. But I am very familiar with it, so I may not be as objective as I usually am.
There is no such thing as objective film criticism, unless we say, well, you know, this film has 157,000 frames and should be projected at 25 per second, that kind of thing.
Well, that's true. But I will be, it has sort of an emotional kind of investment for me that I don't normally, well, I don't know. Anyway, that's my background to the Italian Job. Is it your first time? Presumably not.
No, I have seen it before, at least once, probably twice. I've also seen the remake, but we'll come back and talk about that later.
Okay, yeah, we'll see how that compares. But this is the late 60s, and right in the period when Britain was called the first time, the swinging 60s, and it really does feel like, I mean, we have Michael Caine, who I don't think we've had before on Ribbon of Memes.
I don't think so.
Noel Coward in his last film role.
He went on a fair few years after this, just as last.
Yeah, he did. He didn't die. Yes, he just. Benny Hill even is in this film, but it is the. I mean, there's a moment. So Michael Caine is Charlie.
Other people you've never heard of.
Yes, yeah, lots of other people who never appeared again, or at least not on our radar. Directed by Peter Collinson, who I'm afraid I've also never heard of. It is absolutely swinging 60s to the max. In that there's a moment when we get a low angle of Michael Caine. This is quite early on. Charlie Croker has been released from prison, and he steps out of his Aston Martin, and it's a low angle looking up at him with it might be the BBC television centre behind him or something, but it's a London building. He looks incredibly cool. There's an Aston Martin. It just looks like super cool. It's the kind of the era that Austin Powers is harking back to.
Trying to.
Yes. It doesn't quite hit the mark with Austin himself. It's a very good film, but it's not quite hit the mark, as it were. But this is Caine, at the height of his star power, being a cheapy, chirpy cockney.
And yeah, I honestly, when I think of Michael Caine, I think of this and Zulu. And obviously it's a lot earlier. I mean, he did a lot of other stuff. He was very good at a lot of other stuff. But
we have had Michael
Caine
before, The Man Who Would Be King, yes, current favourite film. But he's much younger here.
And Noel Coward is clearly very old.
Yes.
And, the portrayal of his character here, Mr. Bridger, was faintly controversial because he's set up as the kind of, mindlessly patriotic flag shagger,
yes,
which in those
yes.
days was a safe target rather than government policy. But he had not been knighted, and it was quite controversial that he hadn't, because the stuff he'd done was clearly the sort of thing where, you know, you would get a knighted for this much playwriting and services to theatre and so on. But of course, he was the thing that people didn't talk about.
Shocking. Was it still illegal in the UK being gay at this point?
I think it's 69. Not quite illegal anymore, but it's iffy.
Right, okay.
And I may be wrong on that. It's that general period. He was apparently in personal life very, very much the classic old Tory queen type, who probably wouldn't have minded this kind of trappings. But all right. The Noel Coward story that I always like. He is at a palace function. He's going upstairs with the Queen Mother, and she looks over at the beef eaters and says, "They count them before they put them out, Noel." Anyway, so yeah, after the initial unexplained action sequence, which is basically a guy is driving a sports car, and is murdered by somebody parking a bulldozer across the mouth of the tunnel.
Now, there is a lot of car porn in this film, and of this is the first scene we're treated to.
But we don't know who this guy is or why these other guys were trying to kill him. But anyway,
no, yeah, we do see a lot of cars falling down hills as well. Posh cars falling down hills.
Sometimes on fire.
Sometimes on fire, sometimes not. I do appreciate the sometimes not. That's a nice touch.
But the actual story, is, as one might say, starts with Kroger getting released from prison. It's not said what he was in for, though. It's pretty obvious. Pretty much the same thing he's going to be doing immediately again on his exit.
Yes. Petty crime, presumably, but...
Yeah. And... Yeah, ignoring the colour, and I say that with reluctance because the colour is quite important, but in terms of summarising the plot, the widow of the guy who got killed in the preamble contacts him and says, basically, my husband had this great plan for a gold robbery, and I just need someone to carry it through.
But seemed also to know that he was going to get murdered. Yes, I mean, as every other woman in the film. Let's have a foursome or a threesome or a sevensome or whatever it is. There's very, very much free love spirit around. I mean, I don't know if that's the spirit of the times. I mean, it is. Filmically, at least.
I think he would have been considered somewhat exaggerated even by the spirit of the times, but pointing in the same direction as the spirit of the times, just rather more so.
Yes. It's exaggerated. It's probably the best way of putting it. Yes, but his old chum knew he was going to get murdered and therefore did a very convoluted film of how exactly he was going to do this. I mean, you think if he could plan all that out, he could avoid getting assassinated at some point, but he knew the mafia would not be happy with this. There's an element of sort of nationalism and kind of... which in these very nationalistic times is a little uncomfortable, I suppose.
Well, I think this is used mostly to sell it to Mr. Bridger.
Yes.
Who is clearly of the Britain must be best.
Yes, he's very worried about the balance of payments of Britain, and so adding $4 million illicitly to the economy would be... very nice from his point of view, specifically because it'll stick one in the eye of the Italians. This was also of the quaint era when it was thought... England, I am in no position to wade into football, but this was right after England got to the final of the World Cup, and so it was thought that it was quite likely that England would continue to do well in World Cup things, which turned out not to be the case. But a subplot of this is there is a final, is it a World Cup final, something of that?
There is a football match happening in Turin, which provides convenient cover for the operation.
I mean,
this is one of the classic heist films. I don't think anybody would argue with that.
That was what I was about to say. Yeah.
And in keeping with that, we get some idea of what's going on, but only hints. Which I think is a good middle ground between explaining the whole plan up front. Obviously, you lose the dramatic tension, and explaining nothing, which leaves me at least feeling as if I've had a magic trick played on me.
Yeah, I mean, you do need to find the middle ground in a heist. The problem is it's so kind of cliche that you kind of know anything that is graphically explained to you as this is how it's going to happen is the bit that's going to go wrong. Mm-hmm. And anything that isn't explained to you is the bit they've planned out well ahead of time and it's going to go perfectly. And I'm not sure that was such a problem at the, very unlikely it was the first heist movie, but it might be the first kind of big British heist movie, but it does find a really nice middle ground of explaining. So the idea is they're going to scupper the traffic control centre in Turin, create a huge traffic jam, And then we're not quite kind of clearly explained how, but then they'll go in, hijack this car full of gold bullion, this security car, and then drive it away in minis. I did read, so the idea that a mini weighs about 900 kilos and the amount of gold was about 1.5 tons. So it was something along the order of them having to carry 2.5 times their own weight in gold. But
though this is the era of Paddy Hopkirk, I think, rally driver, who famously did all sorts of amazing things with minis that people thought weren't possible. And I think he is at least a spiritual influence on this.
Well, this is an era when minis were actually small cars.
Well, that's the other thing. It's not obvious if you've met a modern mini. I have been in a classic mini. I can sit comfortably in a classic mini, which is more than I can say of many larger cars.
Oh, really? I can even drive. Okay.
But they were designed to be able to hold 4 adults.
Yes.
And there's just very little minimum between them and the outside world.
Okay. But yeah, we get this nice, so he kind of sells this plan to Mr. Bridger.
Because he's going to need a lot of money to make it happen. That is clear.
Yes, and so he needs the backing. He's never had an operation like this before, but he is finally trusted after giving a good going over. I mean, there's some characters. They're all very one dimensional, but we have their lovely kind of Camp Freddy and you know, all these characters that have.
When Benny Hill playing himself is the third best developed character in the film, I think you have a lack of characters.
That's true. I mean, they are super superficial. I think the most filled in character of all is Charlie, who you can very quickly summarise as chirpy Cockney ne'er-do-well, which you had already done. I mean, you could write his character exactly from that one line, three word summary. And no one else is given really more character depth or interest. Noel Coward may, but again, as you say, he's like the.
He's one note. Well, yeah, they're all right. Two notes, flag shagging and menace.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so cool that it carries you along with it without any kind of character depth. And maybe this is one of my problems with it, really, that it's very, very much style over substance. It's really stylish and really pulls you in. It's really funny. It's joyful. You know, we are coming off the back of just watching 70s dismal dystopian science fiction film.
Yeah, that was my feeling too. There's just so much more energy.
Yeah.
In everything.
It is. It just pulls you along whether you want to or not. It's just fun. It's just fun to watch. I'm sort of complaining about the one note things, but this is a heist movie and it's sort of a slightly ensemble cast. And it's a caper and really that's what you want. You want to see these characters who you don't hate and quite like in some areas because they're funny and enthusiastic and pretty. You want to see them get away with it, or at least how they get away with it. And that's really all you need for this kind of film.
And this is another thing that's a bit like Gross Point Blank, in that they had an ending written, they had several endings written for this. Nobody was quite happy with them. So in the end, they did the classic cliffhanger, and it is a classic cliffhanger. I mean, if they had got away with it, the film would have worked. But I think because it does that step outside the standard, even at this point, what is the standard heist film framework, it is much more memorable as a result.
Yes, so we have this, basically they've got the coach with the gold bullion, they're very excited, they're all drinking champagne, and then slightly worse for wear driver drives halfway off a cliff, or crashes, and then ends up with the back of the coach dangling off a cliff, with all the gold bullion sliding to the back, and Charlie's got a great idea, but we never find out what it was, though I have read some good ideas online about how to do it. There are ways you could get out of that, and Charlie probably will, but we don't know.
The thing that's possibly a bit more serious is that presumably the Mafia is chasing them. We've seen the Mafia getting set up to chase them all through the film. And you know, they're going to be around somewhere. So whatever solution you have, it would probably better be a fairly quick one.
Yeah, but we're left with, it's kind of, doesn't matter too much. I mean, it almost like, it's not quite, but it's almost like a Hays Code kind of nod, to the kind of, we can't see them actually getting away with it because they're criminals. It isn't that, obviously. It's a British film and it's outside. Actually, the Motion Picture Code might have still just about been in
existence. It was still technically in force at this point, but widely disrespected.
Most people had started to ignore it.
Certainly, there's got a release in the States, and I don't think they'd made any changes.
It has a bizarre part. I don't know if you've seen the poster for the States version of it, but it just completely misses the point of the whole thing. It's like it looks like a poster for the Ipcress file or something like that. It's like some kind of dark espionage film instead of the fun caper that it is, which might be why it didn't do so well in the States. I mean, going back to the kind of plot, we get the first half is basically them planning it. We get the classic, you're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off. He's not Australian. I don't know what it is. And then we have the actual heist. For me, we have the creepy Benny Hill. Benny Hill wrote his scenes. I don't know what that kind of means, really. It's slightly,
Well, I think they are what you would expect if you employed Benny Hill and asked him to write a scene.
Yes, bawdy and slightly,
and women unusual. Are objects.
And women are objects, yeah. But everyone else treats women like objects for the most part. I mean, we have nominally, one of the Charlie's girlfriend, Lorna, is kind of one of the team, but she gets disposed of pretty quickly so the boys can have their fun otherwise.
Yeah, it would have been nice to see her actually. I mean, she is clearly in the early stages involved in the planning and so on.
Yeah,
she's not just fetching the tea. But when it becomes clear that the Mafia are going to be trying to stop them as well as the police and so on, he packs her off and that's it. Never seen again.
That's it. She's off to Geneva. I find the actual heist is a bit less fun, partially because, you know, it deals with the reality that they have to be a bit violent here, which is a bit like, you know, the myth of the great train robbery compared to the brain damaged, did he die? The
guy
on the train?
Well, certainly has by now, but yeah.
I think he took serious brain damage at the time. So, you do involve...
That was actually considered quite shocking at the time because there was this whole image of glamorous criminals and no, you just beat this guy on the head because you could.
Because, you know, as a criminal mindset, you are more interested in your material wealth than how that affects other people. But then there's a lot of time devoted to Minnie's driving around touring and up and down steps and through storm drains.
Yeah, and this obviously is the bit that everybody remembers, and I think it's reasonable that it should be so.
Yeah, yeah.
And I summed this up in my notes as cars where cars should not be.
Exactly, yes. And you sent me a cutscene of this kind of beautiful, I can see why it's not in the film, but it's these minis kind of dancing round with an orchestra playing in the background. Completely incongruous.
If you search Italian Job Blue Danube, you should find it.
Yes, set to the backdrop of the Blue Danube. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but it's pretty. I mean, this is where, because I have seen this so many times, I just kind of switch off with it. It's incredible driving. It's very pretty. I'm not a petrol head. And I'm not that. To me, you could shorthand a lot of that. Just the minis make it out of Turin. It goes on a bit too long for me, this sequence.
I think what they're trying for from an emotional beat perspective, and to some extent it succeeds, is this is the payoff.
Yes.
You know, this is the bit where either things are going right because they are awesome, or things are going slightly wrong and are salvaged because they are awesome.
Yes.
And so in that sense, it's the payoff from all the establishing that these guys really are good at what they do and have made preparations and things. But
totally
I agree.
It
can be overdone.
Well, I would have liked to see a bit more of, we do get a few kind of asides, like they really are getting rather close. I would have liked to see a bit more of the characters in the cars.
It's quite hard to work out which car Charlie is supposed to be in quite a bit of it.
Basically, the cars are the characters at that bit, just driving around, and you forget that there's people in them. I like the payoff of heist film, and things go slightly wrong, but not very wrong. The Mafia don't really do a lot in the end. The last bit of the film loses me. That's probably just familiarity breeding contempt a bit. But it is all fun and bright and breezy.
This is before Knight Rider, so showing a car driving up into the back of a larger vehicle was still unusual.
And, they're impressive stunts. I mean, presumably it was sped up a bit, but to get into a car, to drive into it at that kind of speed, then not drive through the cab at the end of the line, they're very impressive car stunts. I'm just not terribly thrilled by them personally. It doesn't get my adrenaline flowing. Yes, I like it, but I don't adore it in the way that my brother just did.
That's fair. And one thing I like about it is that there is no attempt to show the thieves as morally good. I'm just remembering the TV series Leverage, because that's a show I enjoyed quite a lot, but that made a point, and just as Mission Impossible did back in the day, of yes, these guys are doing bad things, but they are only doing them to bad people.
Yeah, that gets
a bit tiring after a while, doesn't it? That's not happening here. These may be chirpy, cheerful bad guys, but they're still bad guys.
Well, they're patriotic, cheerful, chirpy bad guys. Even though they do this to their own government as well, presumably. But they're part of the Brit cool aesthetic, whatever it was called in the 60s. I remember Cool Britannia from the 90s, but I can't remember what it was. But it's that kind of early.
Not the first, but quite an early example of computer intrusion on a film, and remarkably accurate. I mean, that sort of physical intrusion is generally what you would have to do in those days.
Right. You mean them swapping the tapes over
They get the prof to do the special traffic control tape that will cause the terminal traffic jam, and then have to break into the traffic control building to swap it over. And I must admit, I had no idea that Turin Traffic Control had so many absolutely gorgeous women working in it.
Yeah. Well, you do now, and that's worth knowing. I mean, there's not much more to delve into in the Italian Job. Yes, exactly. There's no depth to it. The characters have no depth, but it is a really well done heist movie, a caper movie as well. As capers go, it's a really good one with likable characters, and it pulls you through it. The stunt work is incredible in the driving, and it's funny and zingy. Does that add up to a masterpiece for me? It's certainly a classic.
Yeah, I it's close. I enjoyed it. I would happily watch it again, possibly quite soon, but it doesn't quite cross over into masterpiece for me. It does the things it does very well, but in order to achieve them, it simply dumps most of the characterization.
I think that there's nothing for me that I wouldn't be excited, for instance, if they did, like, oh, next year we're going to do, the Spanish Job. I'd watch it, but I wouldn't be enthused about, oh, we're going to see all these characters back again. It's really good. But the difference between a really fun, good, bubbly movie and what I consider a masterpiece. So it's not making it into my list either. But it's very good. How is the sequel then, the remake?
Well, yeah, I should say, first of all, for anybody who is foolishly starting the podcast at this point, I am generally not a fan of remakes. And there are lots of new scriptwriters, new directors who want to tell their own stories, and they don't get a chance to because the money men say, make a remake of this instead.
Yeah, do this thing that made his money. Again.
Yeah. So, this is 2003. And 2003, most crucially, is after 2001, when various things happened in the world, but also Ocean's 11 remake came out. So there was a mini heist boom for a few years, and I'm pretty sure this got greenlit on the back of that.
Makes sense.
And it is very much a remake in name only. I mean, yes, Charlie Croker is a criminal.
So he does have the named character Charlie Croker in it,
played by Mark Wahlberg, who's trying to get out of his underwear model stereotype.
Frankly, not a huge Wahlberg fan.
Not succeeding. I mean, he's okay. Yeah. He's not specially watchable, and it's always good to see Donald Sutherland.
Yes, agreed.
Who is in for about 5 minutes?
Oh, does he have the Noel Coward role then?
Yes. Okay. Well, yes, sort of. Yes, he is called Mr. Bridger. Yes, he is a senior criminal. He has come out of retirement to do one last job with the crew. And they do the job, and there's a bit of shell game, but they are getting away when one of them turns on the others and says, "Ha ha, you fools, you should have realised I was being played by Edward Norton."
Okay.
Shoots Donald Sutherland / Mr. Bridger fatally. The rest of them escape by diving into the icy water and not freezing to death somehow.
Oh, very different sort of film then, I guess.
Well, that is the preamble. It's the first 20 minutes or so. And I would just like to mention Roger's firearms called 3 feet of water is enough to stop pretty much any bullet from being dangerous to you.
Right, yep.
Anyway.
Worth knowing. I mean, you might freeze to death, but you won't get shot.
Yeah. But it then switches to several years later. And essentially, Edward Norton's character becomes the villain of this. He has gone into hiding, but not very well. And he's gradually selling off the gold to fund his excessive lifestyle. And our heroes find out about this and essentially run the heist on him.
Okay, so it's kind of a heist revenge flick.
Yeah, so as we were saying, the victim has to be a bad guy, and here he is the bad guy who shot Ronald Sutherland.
That's pretty bad. Unless he's the one from Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
So it has very little to do with the Italian Job original. It does have minis, and the gold is being moved in an armoured car by him to the airport.
In Turin?
No, in Los Angeles, and it's going to be moved to Mexico or somewhere where they can't easily get it. So they do cause a traffic jam.
Where's the Italian come into it?
Oh, the 20-minute first thing is in Venice.
Oh, okay. Right.
So later they talk about, we'll do this like the Italian job.
I see, okay. All right, fair enough.
But basically it's a matter of we will blow a hole in the specific spot of Los Angeles Road where the van is stopped in traffic, drop it into the subway, torch it open, load the gold into the minis, do the whole mini thing.
And then we have the cars where cars should not be.
Well, yeah, except we don't. Because okay. Because these are modern minis, which obviously they had to do to get the endorsement deal from BMW.
Right.
And so, you know, they may look vaguely mini-like, but they are no smaller than any other car.
Okay.
Noting this is mostly the pre-urban tank era.
Right,
of American
yes.
car design. So, I mean, yes, they're showing them as terribly agile. But they can't actually do the things that the original film did of, no, a car should not be able to go down church steps because the pursuers could do just anything that they could do.
I see. So it kind of, yeah, it loses something there. So overall, does it work as a heist movie?
It works as a heist movie. Oh, yeah, the Roger's safe corner, I should just say. This is from the days when a glossary locker was a new and surprising thing. They make a big point of, oh, this safe has a glossary locker.
Right.
this is a glass panel in the safe so that if you drill through it, the panel shatters and it slams some bolts shut.
Okay. Is that not used anymore?
No, it's just here. It's new and special, and now it's practically any safe that you're trying to be serious about.
Okay.
But anyway, here's the great thing. You know, cinema since 1969 has discovered women.
Ooh, okay.
There's only one woman on the team. She is Bridger's daughter, who went legit and is basically a locks and safes consultant.
Okay.
But she gets lured into the operation because of revenge on dad's killer.
And does she have a character? Do any of them have characters?
She's played by Charlize Theron.
Okay, that's a character.
Nobody is doing a terrible acting job here. The two people who impressed me were actually two quite small parts. He's credited as Mos Def. I check him on IMDb because he uses a different name now, which I have now forgotten, I'm afraid. But at the time he was a rapper.
I like Mos Def. He was in the new Hitchhiker's film, which has many problems, but I liked him as Ford Prefect.
And in here, he's the explosives guy. And he's good fun in that. And it's not a demanding role, but he does it well. He's clearly making the most of it. He's having fun with it. The other person who appears to be having fun is Jason Statham. Before he became Jason Statham. It's an early big role, and certainly he wasn't considered leading man material at this point.
Okay.
He is the expert driver. He is known as Handsome Rob. And that is basically his character.
There we go. We know his character. Right, okay.
At one point, he seduces a female security guard whose job is to stop him getting through simply by being Handsome Rob at her. That sort of seduction superpower. Those two are having great fun with their small roles, and I can quite see why they got other jobs off the back of this.
Right.
Everyone else, well, you know, shrug. Seth Green. Seth Green is Seth Green. Mark Wahlberg is Mark Wahlberg.
Well, there we are. Okay, so...
It's not great.
Does it capture the spirit of the times like the Italian Job did, or the fun and energy of it?
It has some energy, at least. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it in itself, I suppose, particularly. It is fun in itself. It is absolutely not a modern substitute for the Italian Job.
Okay.
Where it tries to copy the Italian Job, I think it actually gets worse thereby. I mean... Yeah, you can put in the modern minis, but if you can't do the mini stunts with them, what's the point?
Well, again, not to preempt an episode we may do at some point, but I get the impression, I haven't seen either, but I get the impression the new Ocean's 11 works as well in a different way than the original Ocean's 11. Is that fair to say?
Possibly, yeah. I have actually seen all of the Ocean's films, all five of them. Wow. Yes, including the original Rat Pack one.
Okay. Well, I will say no more because we may think about an episode.
Yeah. This, I think it would be fair to say, I don't think it would have been made without Ocean's 11 being a huge success. And it's not great, but it's fun. It's good workmanlike stuff. Not every film has to be a masterpiece. And it is enjoyable on its own terms. Just don't think of it as the Italian Job.
I might well give it a watch, but I didn't get around to it for this episode. But there we are, The Italian Job. We liked it lots, but no masterpiece. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, many good things about it, but not quite in the end.
Not for us, anyway. I wouldn't fight anyone who said it was, but not for me. All right. Not that I fight anyone who said anything.
All it comes down to is get a bloody move on.